Welcome to the Redesign Your Mind podcast, where we have real conversations around mental health, self-improvement, and how we can find more meaning in our lives. I'm your host, Stefan Moralia. The podcast is loosely inspired by my book, Redesign Your Mind, Tools and Inspiration for Positive Mental Health, which is available on Amazon, Kindle, iTunes, and Audible. Please refer to the show notes for more information, including a disclaimer and how you can get in contact with me. Thanks for listening. Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to another episode, the first one for 2021 of Redesign Your Mind. I have the best start to the year with Angela Horn. She's got a YouTube video that has over 900,000 views on a TEDx talk that she did. And it's basically the less you own, the more you have. And talking about minimalism as well. So I'm really looking forward to today's chat and seeing what I can learn about trying to worry less about stuff. And looking forward to seeing how Angela can try and help me and help you guys too. So stay tuned and hopefully it's a good chat. Hi, Angela. Thanks for coming on the show today. How are you going?
Oh, good. Thank you. It's the end of my day. the beginning of my day. I see it's the end of yours, but it's going good. We went camping this weekend and it was super, super relaxing. So it's a great way to start the week on that kind of an energetic note.
Nice. And you said to me before as well, and I guess we're getting right into it straight away, that you've actually chosen with your wife, I think, to move out of the city for a year or so. So tell us a bit about that and how that's all going.
So it's going particularly well. It kind of happened like most of our things do. It happened sort of by chance. I was busy. We needed to move anyway. The lease on our apartment was coming to an end and I was on Gumtree looking for places. And I spotted this little house and we kind of had an idea that maybe we didn't want to be right in the city, but we were thinking maybe to go outside into the suburbs or whatever. And somehow I saw this little place and I just sent out a query on a whim, actually without even talking to my wife about it. And the woman phoned me back and she told me, and she said, well, actually it's on a farm and it's 2.5 hours out of Cape Town. So I checked with my wife and she's game. So we came out to have a look and we thought, well, why not? Because we've both been working from home. I mean, lockdown proved that you can work from anywhere. No one's True. Really to an office. So we thought, why not just dive in? And city life, we both like originally from Johannesburg and very much city people. But I think it's just gotten to a point where it's too busy and we needed some quiet. So we thought, why not? And it's a very different life from what we used to, but it's working well for us because it's eliminated the distractions and now we can just focus on the things that are important to us and also just slowing down, you know, being more mindful, being more present.
Yeah. And yeah, I can't wait to hear all your thoughts on being mindful and minimalism as well. And I really think that our generation has a great opportunity that we're able to be a lot more flexible and pack up our stuff and you know, move away, but still do our job that we were doing, or at least, you know, find something we can do online. And that's something I really hope to do as I, you know, in the next, when things open up anyway, just, you know, work from a different city or country or whatever it is. And, you know, being able to escape like that, I guess, have you found anything that has surprised you or challenged you that you didn't think would be that way?
You mean specifically because of where we've moved to?
Yeah, like even mentally, I mean, you know, you said you're both city people. For me, I've pretty much always been a city person as well. And whilst I admire what you've done, I'm also, I would be scared that I move out there and say, oh my God, there's no people. Like what? I'm all alone and scared. And, you know, how have you found that adjustment? Or has it been just, this is so great. I don't know what why we didn't come here sooner.
This is so great. I don't know why we didn't come here sooner is my wife's approach.
Okay.
I'm prone to a little bit of anxiety. So like one interesting thing is the noises are very different out here. So like we're used to city noise, but farm noise is very different. I don't just mean animals. There's like weird creaks. There's like all the silence that you have to deal with. But there's no crime in our area. So we don't have any burglar bars or anything like that. And that's been weird. Like I've had to learn how to calm down and just be able to sleep at night.
Wow.
But that's changed now. So I'm fine with that. It's made me appreciate, like now our shopping commute is about 20 minutes drive, whereas before it was a 10 minute walk.
Yeah.
So like now it's like a big deal, you know, you think, well, you're going to the shops, you have to do the groceries and stuff. You have to remember everything, you know, it's all these little things. So it makes you appreciate everything. Another interesting example is that our water is from a dam, so we can't drink it.
Oh,
in the city, we used to be able to drink water from the tap. Here, you have to buy your water in town. And then the water through the tap is for everything else, you know, like showering or dishes or whatever. Everything that happens out here brings you back into the moment and shows you this is something else to be grateful for, you know, because in the city it's like, there's just water. And here there is as well, but you can't drink it, you know. So,
100%.
And then it's like, something to be grateful for. And it's good like that because it slows you down and it says, okay, you know, you don't just take everything for granted. So we found that time's going a lot slower here. And I think it's because we're in the moment more. So that's been amazing for us.
I love that. And it's something that in the city life, that would be such an inconvenience, saying, oh, I need to go get water or I need to go do this. But like you said, it seems that everything you're doing out there is connecting you more and more to yourself and to nature as well. You know, it's something I'm spending a lot more time researching is about nature and our natural, I guess, instincts. And you talk about the noises changing. I mean, in the city where used to hearing car alarms go off or someone speeding down a road and that sets off those triggers in our mind, whereas out there you're hearing these animal noises, which probably at first still does trigger something because we're not used to that. But I think it's amazing, and really we should all try and do what you're doing. And that's something probably leads me onto this too, that you've got your blog, which is called Mostly Mindful, I believe. And I'll put all the information in the show notes for everyone listening or watching. And you actually share pretty up-to-date posts and pictures of what you're going through. So for anyone that is stuck in the city and can't get out, definitely go check out that blog and stay in touch with Angela there. But I guess building on that and moving throughout our chat, in regards to how I found you as well. So obviously, always watching different videos and things. And I found your TEDx talk on YouTube and it just popped up and you had over 900,000 views, which is a great achievement as well. I'm, you know, really proud of you for that. And I watched the video and I said, wow, you know, all the mental health stuff I've done, all the work I've put into my mindset and dealing with challenges, I still struggle to have this approach where I don't want things and money. And it's still something, I'm working on. And I guess in my day job as a financial advisor, you know, it is all about trying to accumulate more and build more wealth. And even though I take a real lifestyle approach and a real, you know, what makes you happy and let's try and provide that life financially for you, it's not just about the numbers. I still find for myself and a lot of people that, you know, we put too much focus on money and stuff. And I can't wait to spend a lot of time on this. But for those listening, and I'll put this in the bio as well, Angela's talk was labeled, the less you own, the more you have. And it really resonated with me because in my younger years, I guess 10 years ago when I started working in these fields, it was such an obsession to make more money and to get more stuff. And probably the last year or two, for the first time in my life, I've actually started to downsize some of that and say, right, what's really important to me now? Do I need X amount of, you know, portfolios or property or whatever, or what truly makes me happy? So I'd love to know, building on all of that, how did you come across the less you own, the more you have? How did that spark in your mind just to start off?
Sure. I hadn't actually thought about it from that point of view because it kind of, I didn't coin the phrase, I'm so sure someone else did, but I thought about it sort of after the fact. And if I think looking back, there were two catalysts that kind of got me to that point. And the first one I only realized much later is that I had to move my parents, which I kind of allude to in the talk. I had to move them into a home. And looking at everything that they'd owned and amassed and the fact that it hadn't really made them happy or made such a difference in their lives, that was what spurred me on to get rid of things. And the other half is that we had a lot of debt. So we'd started talking to an accountant about how we could get out of the debt. And that, I think, maybe on some level triggered things for us. And we realized we needed to clean up our act a little bit. And then I hit on the idea that perhaps, you know, we should not just have all this stuff. Perhaps we should downsize completely and just start with a clean slate. And it was a lot to do with moving house, which, as you probably well know, is one of the most stressful things that people can do. They say, I don't know how true it is, but they say it's up there with getting divorced.
Well, hopefully we never experience that.
Well, exactly. So I just thought, well, why not get rid of everything and just see, you know, if that would be easy. And it really was. It opened up so much for us. And that's, I think, when we started realizing that the less physical things you own, then it's like you have more time, you've got more freedom, you've got more money because you're not spending it on stuff. Yeah. So I think that's kind of how it iterated.
Yeah, and it's really something we just like, it's really flipping what, I guess, the last 50 years of what people have thought. It's flipping it on its head. And, you know, since I watched your video as well, I just thought about it with certain things that friends have or that I might have. And one of the people I know has a boat, and they literally, so yeah, you've got the boat, you need to pay to, you know, register the boat, insure the boat, service the boat, you know, take out the boat. And it's just something that I thought, wow, like this is just an example. And I don't have anything against boats. You know, everyone's got their passions, but if you've got that and then you've got another 10 things just like it, or if it's clothes or shoes or, you know, whatever it is, it's something that kind of drags on us spending time on what really matters. And for me, something I've found recently, probably in the last few years, is that for me, time with my friends and family is worth way more than the stuff. You know, we can't see it at the time. I think, don't you think that's one of the challenges as well, that at the time we want this gratification from buying something or enjoying a piece of something, but it's not truly what makes us happy. And I'm not sure, have you done any research into that, or is this all from your personal experiences? How do you find all of that?
I think there has been a lot of research done into it, and probably if I'd read about it, I would have started seeing the comparisons in my own life, but it's just all based on my own experience. I started realizing that the money you spend on your experiences stays with you. And I think I did do some research for the talk where they said that if you buy something, the enjoyment factor lasts for this amount of time, whereas if you spend it on an experience, even if it turns out to be a bad experience, that stays with you in a positive way. And we actually experienced that. There's one story that a really silly one that I relate, where we went on honeymoon and it was a terrible experience. Like in retrospect, it really wasn't very good. And at the time we were so unhappy. We'd spent all this money, but now it's like, it's a laughing thing for us. So it's a story. And it stayed with us and it's made us happy. Whereas if I'd spent that amount of money on a thing, the thing would be long gone, the money would be gone, and I would have no memory of it.
Yep,
so
that's a great
that's
call.
Just, yeah, so that's how I try and think of it now. And we often, like if we're thinking of buying something, like we had to buy a car. We hadn't had a car in like 8 years. We never missed it because we were in the city and now we had to buy one. So you talk through the details and it's like, okay, fine, you need the car and you're happy with it.
Yes.
But we're also thinking about buying bicycles because of where we're living. But we haven't yet because we keep going back and saying, okay, if you get bicycles, then like you need to park them somewhere. Do we have somewhere to park them? Etc. Like there are all these, you know, like you were
extra
saying
things
earlier about
to
the
consider. Yeah, you don't realize till later on that burden of having something.
No, exactly. So before we rush in and buy something, we think, okay, will we use the bicycles regularly and whatever? So we don't just do it, like we talk about it for a few weeks or a month or whatever before, because it's still a financial outlay, you know. And if you don't want them, then it's the added like disadvantage, because now you've got to sell them again. So
and look, yeah, that's something for you that, you know, a lot of people can learn from, that you're taking calculated, thoughtful purchases. You're saying, right, we think we need this, let's go through a process. So that's already something I've learned, you've just said there. Now people like myself maybe will rush into something. No, go home, have a chat with your partner or someone else that you feel comfortable with, and, you know, sit on it. Sometimes I even say, you know, let the dust settle on that thought, and then a week or two later you'll know if you really need that. And I think that's something that, you know, is really important for those listening, that you've got to think your way through it, not just rush into making that purchase.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, believe me, we still make mistakes. Occasionally, like we also get starry-eyed and it's like, oh, you want that thing or whatever. And then you get it home and it's like, oh, okay, well, maybe we didn't want it that much. But fortunately, those mistakes are far fewer now. But it is like, if you can put a gap between you and making the purchase and like go home and think about it first, often you'll find you need it, but just as often you'll find out, well, actually, now that I talked through the details, this doesn't make sense. I can't do that X, Y, Z. So no, it's better that I don't buy it, or maybe I don't buy it right now.
Yeah, sure.
So I think having a gap is a good thing.
Yeah, no, I love that. That's a great tip. So moving on then, kind of on the same topic, but minimalism. So I guess maybe start by saying what minimalism is to you. And I've seen a few docos and things, and there's a few on Netflix, I think. But yeah, what does it mean to you, and how has it impacted your mental health?
Sure. The mental health's been amazing. As I think I might have mentioned earlier, I am sort of prone to bouts of anxiety or whatever. And having owning less means less to think about, which for me means less to obsess over. So it also, like, I'll just start with what it isn't, because a lot of people, and it could be like that for some, like they think minimalism is only owning 5 or 10 or 20 things or whatever and living in an empty apartment.
I think that's what the doco on Netflix was like, but I'm not sure if that's right. We'll find out.
I would still like to try that at some point. It's like, just have nothing. It's another one of my experiences that I'm aspiring to, but not right now.
Okay.
For me, it's having what I need and without being completely uncomfortable, but at the same time, not feeling clutter. And that was one of the downsides that we found, because often we'll rent a furnished apartment because we don't own things. And then you get there and it's cluttered with people's things. So for me, it's like, it's having minimal clutter and just having what you need that's really, I would say, my definition.
Yeah, love it. And obviously anxiety is something that impacts on me, and it's funny. I feel like I hate clutter. So I'm always saying to my girlfriend, you know, something will just be sitting on a table and I'll say, oh, we need to put that away. And maybe I should do some research into this, but it could be the anxious mind that, you know, we like seeing things spacious and clear, and we don't like things cluttered because our mind feels cluttered. I'm not sure if that's how you feel.
Exactly how I feel. And it is, they've done studies on that as well, about how clutter stresses people out, whether it's consciously or unconsciously. If there's clutter and a mess around, it's going to weigh on your conscience. So you're not wrong about that. So I do it as well. In our house, we laugh too. I'm always the one putting things away. I get a little bit too obsessive about it, and I'm learning to relax more. But it is, I think it's important to like have clean space, because then it's not something else for you to worry about, you know, or stress or niggle, and it creates space for the things that matter in your life, the projects you really want to work on.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess from your experience or some people in the blog, how have you found, I guess, going from that old world to the new world? I mean, have you experienced any people that have just totally gone from, you know, the most cluttered or obsessive about stuff type of people to, you know, living on a farm without a bicycle, so to speak? So yeah, maybe give the listeners something you've seen in someone else or in yourself, something that you used to obsess about, maybe that you thought was important, that now that you've decluttered and got rid of things, you've realized, wow, that was just chewing up my mental capacity for no reason.
I think back, like I was always very obsessed about image and labels and clothes in particular. So that was one thing that I'm actually quite grateful to, like, that I let that go. And I've seen online, there's a lot of people that were sort of in a similar frame of mind. The well-known, the two, Ryan and Joshua from The Minimalists, they were both very obsessed about having all the right toys, so to speak. And they ditched it, and now they're much happier. So yeah, from my own experience, I remember, like, I would get myself into debt so that I could have the right shoes or jeans or whatever it is. And now, like, I still, obviously you want to look good when you go out, but it doesn't have to be R1,000 pair of jeans. You know, now I'm thinking, okay, I need to buy something but it also has to be mindfully made. So there's a lot more of a thought process. Whereas before it was just, I've got to have the jeans with this label, otherwise I'm not cool or whatever, you know?
Yeah. And now, sorry.
No, that's cool.
Yeah, I was going to say that's, oh, sorry, that for me is something like, it's totally what I was like growing up. And for me, it then evolved into, I needed to have a certain car or a certain house or something like that. And it, you know, got even out of hand because some of these things aren't achievable. So, you know, why do you think people want that? Why do you think we gravitate towards that? We get told again and again that, you know, there's certain things we don't need. Why do you think, or in your own instance, why did you gravitate to wanting those special jeans and clothes, even though, you know, maybe you weren't taught that? Why do you think that happened?
I think it's what you think will make you happy at the end of the day. And for me personally, it was finally understanding that happiness is something I have control over. So it's a case of, I think psychologists call it having an external locus of control versus an internal locus of control. So internal is basically, I'm in charge of my happiness. It's, I don't have to rely on that pair of jeans to make me happy, or that person to make me happy, or that job promotion, etc. It's inside. It's like I have control over. It's not like when I get that, then I'll be happy. It's no, I'm happy right now. Even though circumstances, I would like certain things to change or improve or whatever. It's not like you don't have any goals. Yep. You're always striving towards something, but your happiness set point is there. I think that was for me as like a big realization, is that I have control over my happiness. I am happy right now. And then I can still aspire to X, Y, Z, you know?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. In her book, The How of Happiness, Sonia Libermirsky, I think she's a psychologist and I don't know what else, but she says that there's, out of 100% pie chart, I think 40% of the happiness is in your control. There's a certain percentage that's genetics and a certain percent is situational, but a large portion of that pie is yours. Wow. And that's why she says, like, whether you win the lottery or you have an accident and you end up in a wheelchair, your happiness set point returns within a year. To that same baseline. It's interesting. And I think I at some point realized that happiness is in my control, and that's kind of how I arrived at things for myself.
Yeah, I love it. And you, at the same time, you learned that stuff wasn't making you happy. That penny dropped for you as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. I realized, like before, like I said, I would spend money, get myself into debt, thinking that that thing would make me happy. And then you get it and it actually doesn't. And now you feel worse because you're in debt. So you're making, it's like this vicious cycle. So,
and it's funny, even my own cycle. So in school, I was a overachiever and things mostly went well. And for me, it was, you know, getting more achievement and more success. And I was, to put in your words, you know, all about the external and what people said about me, or what I was ranked in a class, or, you know, how much money I made when I did start working. And yeah, I mean, something I talk about in my book is that, kind of on the same lines of what the psychologist said, but just without the technical skills of it, that I would literally set a goal, achieve that goal, and then just look at the next goal. So I was moving the goalposts each time, which is similar to the stuff. Some people do it with stuff, but for me, it was often with achievement as well. And without even celebrating that achievement, I would look at the next one. And for me, changing mindset, and that's something you've done as well, has been massive. And that's that 40%, because, you know, you said it best before with the holiday. So at the start of my book, I talk about a holiday I went on that didn't go well and it put me in the dumps. And that's that 40% of me saying, you know what, my life's over, or what am I, you know, I loved travel before this holiday and now I don't love travel. So what's the point? And, you know, you're just making it worse and worse. And I did change that mindset. And I talk about at the end of the book that when I went on my next overseas holiday 4 years later or whatever, I was, you know, shitting myself before going on that holiday because I thought I might end up in the same place. But I had to just believe that a lot of it was up to how I saw the holiday and I could choose. And that's that 40%. Something goes wrong and a lot of things did. I can turn it into something funny or something you can look back at and say, I learned something, or at least I got in there and did what I wanted to do. You know, I didn't die wondering. So I'm a big believer of that positive outlook. And I know it gets thrashed in mental health and wellness. And people say, you know, the positive attitude, but it really is important. And for me as well, another thing you said was about your base. You said, you know, after 12 months, let's say you win the lottery and your base is here. After 12 months, you know, you would have went real high and really happy, and then you'll come back down to your standard happiness. And that's why winning the lottery, we don't see people driving around with the biggest smiles on their face, or people that are really rich aren't much happier. And that's proven in studies. What I've aimed to do with myself, and I challenge other people to do, is to increase your level of happiness. So if your gear is, say, second gear, usually is your normal level of happiness, try and get up to third. And that means most of the times you'll be in third, you might jump up to fourth, fifth, or sixth gear. But when you go down, you might go down to second or first. If you're starting in one, and that's your base, when things go bad, you know, you're not going to go too well. So trying to work on that for me is something important too. And I think minimalism and being present is something that really helps with that.
Yeah, no, it absolutely does. It's really so much about mindset. And I know that the whole positive psychology, it does get a knock, you know, like, oh, you've been Pollyanna and you like, that's not the way things are or whatever, but you can choose to see the world the way, you know, and look for good in everything, because there generally is. And I mean, the other side of that coin is like, there's no point arguing with reality, as Byron Katie says in her book. So rather just like, okay, this is the way it is. Get back to normal instead of like poor me or whatever. How best can I get back to my center and move on and just deal with the thing? Because then you'll be happier. Arguing that it shouldn't have been this way actually is shown in studies to make you even more unhappy and more stressed out. Instead of just saying, well, whatever the situation is, okay, it is what it is. I can't argue with it. I can't change it. So, you know, just accepting it and figuring out how to go from there. It's like, I found that's a huge, it's key in like sort of maintaining overall happiness and positivity.
Yeah, 100%. Love it. And so going back to being, I guess, a minimalist, why do you think it's so hard for people to become minimalists? So, you know, why is that a challenge? Why isn't, you know, we all know the research now, but why do you think people aren't going out selling all their stuff and clearing things out?
I think people find comfort maybe, and also there's something about stuff. So like you store your self-worth in it, maybe you store your memories in it, but it's like that thing has something beyond a monetary value for you. And I think people struggle to separate that and to find the self-worth in themselves and to find the memories in themselves. Because a lot of times it comes down to memories. Like, somebody gave me this, so I can't get rid of it. But, you know, and I used to be like that. Like, you'd think, my mom gave me that, and if I don't have it, she's gone. But she's not. She's in my heart. You know, I've got those memories there. And at some point I made that realization. And I think it's why, like, people often argue with me about books as well. Like, they don't want to let go of their books. They say, oh, no, it had this and that. And it's like the story's inside you, you know?
Yeah, wow.
Everything is inside us. We just need to remember it.
Yeah, it is weird because I think even myself, for those watching on YouTube, there's a pile of books behind me which I don't want to throw away because you feel like it's, you know, it's who you are. But like you said, it's on the inside. And I think for me personally, that's a challenge that I've set for myself to try and say, right, some of these things, you know, you can let go at it. And I think it comes down, in my opinion, to personality type as well. I think a lot of those people that are prone to anxiety or depression, we want to hold on more. You know, it's our safety net, it's security, it's who we are, who we were, something we can fall back on. And, you know, again, I'm sure your wife is the same as my girlfriend is, in that they're both happy to let go of things. You know, my girlfriend, I say, oh, we got to get rid of this. Oh yeah, no worries. Whereas I'll be like, oh, you know, we've had that for a while. We might need it again. It must be something that, yeah, we've all got to, I don't know. It must be something that comes with the territory.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's no easy way for anyone, and it's just, it's worked for me. So all I can do is just talk from my own experience, but I know at the same time, it's not easy. You are attached to that stuff. I remember like one thing like years ago, I was much younger and my mom had knitted me a jersey and I washed it on the wrong setting and I pulled it out and I completely ruined it. Oh. And this was like years and years before that my mom had Alzheimer's, before she passed away. So I still had my mom, but I remember like having a meltdown because of what happened to it. So like, that's just one example. Like, but I don't know. I think somehow maybe it's all the marketing that keeps pushing on us that we need this stuff and without it, we're not worth anything. But yeah. I just know it's made me happier not to be so attached to it. But at the same time, I get it's easy for me to say, oh, you know, let go of it or whatever. But everyone's on their own journey. I guess you just have to take it at your own pace.
Yeah, and that's why I've loved this conversation, because you haven't come on here and said, oh, you know, life is free when you let go of all your stuff and, you know, just let it go and you'll be set free. You've come on and said, hey, look, it is tough. I've had, you know, meltdowns about losing things and I've learned the hard way and I've had debt and struggles because of my challenges with stuff. And now I'm finding, as I learn to let go, that things are becoming a lot clearer, a lot more stress-free. And, you know, I'm enjoying my life more because of it. And And so I guess before we wrap up, the last thing I'd just love to ask is, you know, for those listeners out there and myself as well, in a generalist point of view, I guess, what would you say, you know, if someone says, right, I want to, you know, besides going on your blog and reading all of that, which they will, and watching your talk, but what would you tell them is a simple way or a few ways they can get started on trying to, you know, accept having less stuff or letting something go? What would you say is your, you know, key tip that you would give to someone?
Sure. One key tip. So I'll share two things. The one is Saskia, my wife and I, what we do is every 3 months we go through the house and we look at everything and say, like, when last did we use it? Do we still like it? And based on that, we'll either keep things or get rid of them, because clutter is a way of attaching to us. Even like we quite serious minimalists, and then we'll find there's this stuff. It's like, why do we still have that? So we encourage people to go through their homes. For 3 months is a bit extreme. So
maybe like just start with once. That would be good for those at home.
Yes. just go through everything and say, like, when last did I use it? Number one, I'm not talking about seasonal things like a winter jacket in summer, but be honest, like, when last did you use it? And do you really, really like it? Or are you holding onto it because of guilt or some other reason? So those are the, like, I would say that's probably the best advice I could give, is to go through it like that. The minimalists, they had a really cool tip where they put a whole lot of stuff in a box, and they said to themselves, like, if they haven't thought about it in, I don't know what they said, like a month or 2 months or whatever, then they'd get rid of it. But, you know, there's so many different approaches, but I just find, for me, if you're really honest and say, I haven't used it, and honestly, I don't like it, I'm holding on to it because I feel guilty or whatever, then rather let it go, you know, give it to somebody who can use it, because then at least it has purpose in the world.
Yeah, 100%. And on that last bit, yeah, I agree. Like, I've become a real, I don't know, like, I love selling something on Gumtree or Facebook Marketplace. And even if I only get $5 or $10 for it, it's just like you said, you're giving it to someone else to reuse, and that gives it a purpose, instead of that person going to the shops and paying $100 for it, and then yours gets thrown away. We've just wasted a lot of society's effort. And I think the world is getting better at that, reusing and recycling. And in Australia anyway, a lot of trends, a lot of cups and plates and forks and knives from the 70s are coming back, and you go to a cafe and it's like you're going to your old grandma's house, which is crazy. It all comes full circle. But, you know, I love what you've said there, and I'm going to challenge myself, and I'll challenge those listening or watching to at least find one thing that, you know, you can let go of. And it's up to you how much meaning that has to you. But if you can find something that someone else may use, and even if you sell it for $1, you know, that's going to bring more to the world and give you a sense of empowerment. Because it sounds like, Angela, and probably the last thing we'll talk about tonight is, it sounds like a lot of this is up to you, and you've got to empower yourself to do it.
Exactly. Yeah. It starts with you. I mean, and I know, believe me, I'm like, I'm all about the silver bullets. Like, I've looked for every silver bullet, and it comes back to you. You have to put in the work. You have to make the decision. You're in charge of things. So, like, how that turns out is up to you. And it's annoying. I mean, I was annoyed as well. Like, it's so annoying. You want to be able to just, like, here, that's the solution, and it's over with. It's not like that. But at the same time, that makes it empowering, because then you know, you're not relying on anyone else. No one else is the boss of you. Like, you have got the chance right now to make your life whatever you want it to be.
Yeah.
So, no, I mean, that's pretty cool.
I love that, Angela. I think that's a perfect note to finish on today. So, yeah, for those listening and watching, I'll put all the info in the bio. But thanks again, Angela, and wishing you all the best on the farm. And, we'll be tracking your journey closely as well.
Cool. Thanks so much.
Thanks for tuning in for my chat with Angela. Wow, that was so interesting. Like, it wasn't what I expected. I thought maybe she would be on a high horse about how minimalism is, easy, and we should all do it, and it's free to life. But No, she admitted that, you know, it is hard and we are conditioned to want stuff and we do take comfort in that as well. But if you can find a way to start that process, I think life will get a lot easier and a lot, happier too. So I'm going to challenge myself, and I hope that you guys can challenge yourselves to find at least one thing to, give away or sell or, take out of your life. You know, let's see if we can, or at least stop the accumulation of more stuff. So, thanks for listening and watching, and looking forward to seeing you guys on the next episode. Thanks.